We've been waiting for you. Come on in. It's Talk 10 Tuesday for April 16th, 2024 with Chuck Buck and Angela Comfort substituting for Dr. Erica Reamer. Today we welcome senior healthcare consultant Rachel Podzarinski to talk about transforming patient access to streamline care coordination. We'll get the latest coding news from Lori Johnson. Tiffany Ferguson checks in from the Conference of the American College of Physician Advisors in Coronado, California. Dr. James Kennedy is at the Tuesday News Desk, substituting for Tim Powell, and Angela Comfort shares her point of view. Now here's the publisher of ICD-10 Monitor, the host of Talk 10 Tuesday, and a man who missed the eclipse, but is driving to Dubuque to see the cicadas emerge, Chuck Buck.
Yeah, indeed. That kind of bug out. Yeah. Thanks, Clark Anthony, very much. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 594th live edition of Talk 10 Tuesday, and good morning, Angie.
Good morning, Chuck.
Hey, first of all, I want to thank you very much for substituting for Dr. Erica Reamer. And I want to tell you folks a little bit about Angie Comfort. I first met Angie during the run-up to ICD-10. You might remember that. That was back in 2014. And she was with AHIMA. She was a big honcho at AHIMA at that time. And she kind of gave everybody a perspective on why the implementation, as my good friend Rose Stone would say, is, Chuck, we're not going to adopt ICD-10, we're going to implement it. So she gave us some really important reasons why implementing ICD-10 was so important at the time. She's a superwoman, she's very relevant, and she motivates people. She gets a big charge out of motivating people, so we're delighted to have her with us today. As a matter of fact, she's going to be talking today about climate change, and who would ever have thought that climate change would impact coders? But you know, next week being Earth Day, I thought, wow, that's really kind of interesting that you'd be talking about that. So thank you again. Rachel Podzarinski is going to be with us this morning. She's got an exclusive report on how to improve the care coordination by improving the MPI, the Master Person Index at MPI. You must know something about that, do you, Angie?
Yeah, just a little bit. Master Person Index. You know, when I first started in medical records, we had the Rolodex. That was our Master Person Index on index cards. It's come a long way, and we thought maybe it would be a lot better when we got electronic. But as Rachel's going to tell us, we still need to improve.
There you go. Hey, folks, a programming note. At the end of today's broadcast, we're going to announce the winner of the Lab Week contest. Now, the lucky winner is going to receive the coveted laboratory all-access pass, so be sure to be listening. That's coming up at the end of the broadcast, everybody. We have a lot of news and reports, so we begin this morning with Dr. Jim Kennedy. He's substituting for Tim Powell, and he is calling in from the American College of Physician Advisors taking place in Coronado, California. Dr. Kennedy, it's all yours.
Thank you, Chuck, and good morning from San Diego. The news today for everybody is that the IPPS rule for hospitals was released last Wednesday. And for ICD-10 coders, which is many that live to listen to this program, CMS has published a tentative list of the new ICD-10 diagnoses and procedure codes that are coming out for next year. So one of the things to be aware of is in these codes, as I looked at them, there's a couple of concepts. The first concept is going to be lymphomas. They are going to add a concept of lymphoma in remission to the ICD-10 table. This is going to be very similar to multiple myeloma in remission, the leukemias in remission. And therefore, the CDI opportunity is differentiating what is lymphoma in remission, which will be a CC, versus lymphoma, the history of lymphoma. And so how we thread the needle between history of, which means no longer present, not being treated, versus being in remission, which has many different definitions. In essence, it's no evidence of disease, but with the potential for reoccurrence with lymphoma, is going to be an area of opportunity, particularly in the cancer service line. So take a look at that list. They've also come up with a lymphoma that will be primary in the central nervous system. However, the only code they came up with is brain. They did not come up with a code for lymphoma that originates in the spinal cord. So how the guidelines will be rewritten how the 1992 coding clinic will be addressed on this is going to be of interest to us. Furthermore, in the rule, a couple of things. Number one, they did not do a even though they're reevaluating the CC-MCC table, what they introduced, the massive changes of the CC-MCC did not occur this year. So again, another year of reprieve. But if those of us who remember 5 or 6 years ago, they did things like taking chronic heart failure or acute blood loss anemia off of the CC list. And they were going to lower severe malnutrition to a CC instead of an MCC. That did not occur. You still have codes like functional quadriplegia, severe malnutrition, quadriparesis still being an MCC. So dodged a bullet on that. Other than what the new CCs, MCCs with the new codes, they did add a social determinants of health, which is a housing instability. So notice that Medicare for MSDRGs added homelessness for fiscal year 2024. APR DRGs, by the way, did not. CMS is adding housing instability to the CC role. So social workers like Tiffany need to help us understand what the definitions of these words are, because their documentation can come from social work notes. It doesn't have to be documented by the physicians. Other parts of the rule, I think, will celebrate the quality community will celebrate, is that they are introducing a new quality measure called, in essence, the failure to rescue measure. So these are, to what extent did the hospital inhibit death among certain populations? And with this, they are proposing to eliminate PSI-4 from the hospital-based purchasing. And here at the conference here in San Diego, I'm just hearing moaning and groaning about how difficult PSI-4 is. Well, good news, they want to take out PSI-4, but then they'll be substituted with another measure, the failure to rescue measure, which I went to the QualityNet website. I don't know the characteristics of that. Certainly more to come. And then last but not least, Medicare is going to announce a mandatory bundled payment arrangement, which will involve hip replacements, knee replacements, CABG, colectomies, and spinal fusions. So Medicare is looking to try to come, is holding hospitals accountable for the costs that occur 30 days post-discharge. Of course, we know how difficult that is in managing the post-discharge arrangement. My belief is that's going to be severity and risk adjusted. Again, coding has to belly up to the bar and help us work with our physicians to get the documentation that risk adjusts these populations and just all that. So if you want to read the rule, go to cms.gov and go to the newsroom. You'll see it in the upper right-hand corner. It'll take you to a synopsis of the new rule and the links. So that's it. Greetings from San Diego. Back to you, Chuck.
Thank you, Dr. Jim Kennedy. That was Dr. James Kennedy. Dr. Kennedy is the president of CDIMD in Nashville, Tennessee. It's Tuesday. It's April the 16th, 2024. And you're listening to the 594th live edition of Dr. Tuesday. Stand by.
This is for you, healthcare professional. Are you looking for the latest coding and compliance updates and insights? How about wanting to fulfill your CEU requirements? Look no further than the MedLearn Media Resource Center. Dive into the curated collection of resources crafted by industry leaders from our three top-rated publishers, MedLearn Publishing, Rack Monitor, and ICD-10 Monitor. From articles and webinars to interactive workshops and downloadable guides, discover a diverse range of content to fuel your continuous growth. For a single low annual subscription all your teams will have convenient one-stop access to the complete libraries of three trusted brands, MedLearn Publishing, ICD-10 Monitor, and Rock Monitor. One low monthly cost, unlimited access, and all the CEUs you need. It's the MedLearn Media Resource Center. Increase your knowledge with workable coding solutions and actionable answers so you can put the focus back on patient care with the MedLearn Media Resource Center.
Now it's time for the Talking Tuesday Report with Lori Johnson. And good morning, Lori Johnson.
Good morning, Chuck. Good morning, Angie. And happy Hip Week to my fellow HIM professionals. This week, I will conclude the discussion of developing facility-specific coding guidelines. Last week, we reviewed procedures, and this week, we will review diagnosis considerations. Please remember that you can find this information in Developing Facility-Specific Coding Guidelines Practice Brief from AHIMA. First of all, diagnoses that affect reimbursement, quality, or medical necessity should be reported. These diagnoses will determine how much the facility will be paid, as well as if it will be paid. The following topics have a place in your facility-specific coding guidelines. First is personal history. Do you capture personal history codes? These codes may be helpful to pass medical necessity edits. And also, when you're talking about history, you may also want to address how you handle the problem list and what the role is of the problem list at your facility. The next is family history. Document in your guidelines the coding of family history, and if it's limited to specific subjects, such as we only pick up the cardiovascular, or we pick up cancer and cardiovascular, or we like to pick up the mental health considerations. But again, as you're talking to other departments and finding out the data that others are looking for, you want to include that in your guidelines. Status is another place, and it's possible to capture history of specific procedures such as coronary artery bypass grafts or pacemaker insertions. And another type of status is estrogen receptor status. And again, just documenting, we pick this up, we don't pick this up. Allergies. History of medication or environmental allergies are optional codes. Review this topic to determine if these codes will impact quality or reimbursement, such as in risk adjustment. Long-term drug use. The use of anticoagulants may impact medical necessity. And you can outline other codes that should be captured regarding this topic. Smoking status. This data may impact quality reporting. So include in your guidelines your definition for Z72.0, which is tobacco use, because we know that if someone is a current smoker, we call them as that falls under F17. So that code Z72 tobacco use is a little gray. So you want to address how you handle that code. Genetic history. The patient is a carrier of a specific condition. So those codes typically fall between Z14 to Z15. Social determinants of health. There has been much focus on this topic. The SDOH codes fall between Z55 to Z65. Document which topics are to be coded and where to find the documentation for reporting the data. And we know, according to the guidelines, that information doesn't have to be documented by a physician. External cause codes. There are three specific field locators on the UBO4 for external causes, but more may be reported. Document in this area any specific state requirements that apply to external cause codes. And here are some other topics to include in your facility guidelines. Do not resuscitate status, palliative care, body mass index, coma scale, and the National Institute of Health Stroke Scale, or the NIHSS. It is also important to explain which documentation which documentation the coder can use for diagnosis coding. For instance, a body mass index may vary while the patient is an inpatient. Which documentation is your source of truth, or where the coder should pick up that information? Again, that's important because we want the data to be consistent. The result of documented facility-specific coding guidelines is consistent data and easier to train contract staff or new coders. The facility will benefit by as coding impacts reimbursement, quality, contracting, marketing, etc. It impacts a lot of things that happen at the hospital. And with that, Angie, back to you.
Thank you, Lori. Great topic. That was Lori Johnson. Lori's a senior healthcare consultant for Revenue Cycle Solutions, LLC.
As we celebrate HIP Week, we pause to honor all of our dedicated health information professionals. In recognition of your vital role, we have a special announcement. During HIP Week, when you purchase any ICD-10 monitor webcast, you'll receive a complimentary webcast titled Unlocking Clinical Documentation Excellence, How to Engage the Provider. This webcast arms you with powerful techniques to enhance CDI, empowering you to reduce errors, minimize claim denials, and boost operational efficiency. To take advantage of this offer, visit ICD-10 Monitor, select your preferred webcast, and enter promo code F121423 at checkout. But hurry, this offer is only available from now until April 26th and limited to the first 100 orders. Thank you for your unwavering commitment to excellence in healthcare. Visit ICD-10 Monitor today and unlock the tools you need to thrive in your essential role.
Now's the time for the Tucked In Tuesday Coding Report with our good friend, Tiffany Ferguson. Today, Tiffany is reporting from the National Conference of the American College of Physician Advisors. And good morning, Tiffany.
Good morning, Chuck. Good morning, all. So happy to be here this morning. So I wanted to talk about and elaborate a little bit on what Dr. Kennedy had first mentioned related to the 2025 IPPS proposal. And mentioned some notable alterations in readmission metrics. So reflecting really what they wanted to call out is the enhanced communication related to patient care quality and healthcare efficiency as it relates to readmissions. So one of the most significant shifts proposed by CMS involves the removal of 5 measures in the hospital IQR program pertaining to payment associated with a 30-day epicardial infarction, heart failure, pneumonia, and elective primary total hip and total knee arthroplasty, THA-TKA. These condition-specific assessments, collectively known as the hospital-level risk standardized payment measures, are set to be phased out beginning with fiscal year 2026 payment determination. The rationale behind the decision stems from the availability of more comprehensive measures, the Medicare spend per beneficiary hospital measure, and the hospital value-based purchasing, the VPM program, is more attributable to what they see than this previous measure in the IQR. So unlike the condition-specific metrics, MSPB evaluates hospital efficiency, resource utilization, and relative to the national median, providing a broader perspective of healthcare delivery. Additionally, CMS highlights the stability or decline in the performance of these measures since fiscal year of 2019, signaling the need for reevaluation of the program's measure set to accommodate more emerging clinical priorities in that IQR area. What they have decided to continue to maintain, of course, is they affirmed its commitment to the hospital readmission reduction program, which was an interesting call out to say it's still here. A cornerstone of the value-based purchasing initiatives, it's aimed to reducing payments to hospitals with excess readmissions. With no proposed changes in fiscal year 2025, long-term care PPS ruling, previously finalized policies under this program will persist with ensuring continuity and efforts to improve healthcare quality. An interesting additional call out they made was in the commentary related to that is that they're specifically looking at comments for emergency level and observation services with a 30-day period following an inpatient hospitalization. While that's not categorized as a readmission, these instances warrant scrutiny due to the potential implications for care coordination. They went on to highlight concerns regarding medication management support, social determinants of health, and healthcare literacy as contributing factors for a 30-day emergent utilization of services. The focus on transitions of care is signaling a nuanced approach to understanding and addressing the intricacies of patient care beyond traditional readmission metrics that we have previously reported under the HRRP. So with this, there's a new kind of focus on calling out readmissions, which is interesting. That's been kind of controversial the years, and looking at how they're even looking at revisits coming forward and open comment. And with that, back to you, Angie.
Thanks, Tiffany. That was Tiffany Ferguson. Tiffany's the CEO for Phoenix Medical Management.
Reporting a lead story this morning is the Vice President of Professional Services for Harris Data Integrity Solutions, Rachel Paderewski. And good morning, Rachel. Welcome to the broadcast.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me today. I just want to talk a little bit about patient access and how it relates to MPI errors and how that impacts our healthcare systems. As we celebrate Health Information Professionals Week, I think it's important to recognize that patient access is the spot where a lot of the data that we utilize in all of our work is created, and that's a very critical point within our healthcare systems. And it's something that it was constantly challenged. It's a very high quantity position. They're very busy. There's a lot of turnover in the department. So, and that data is what we base a lot of our information on. So ensuring that that information is entered accurately at the very start. And then, of course, once it is, making sure that when patients represent, they're properly searching, they're pulling the right patient so that we are selecting the right person and making sure that we have, you know, those visits pinned to the right medical record number and we're treating the patients based on the right information is so important. And then making sure that they're maintaining proper procedures and policies. So utilizing some of the tools that are out there, AHIMA has recently in January put up a new naming conventions policy. It's the naming framework that is really detailed about how to name patients in a variety of different ways and circumstances. So it's very detailed in a lot of that ways, a lot of those different types of names, different regions and way people name people. It's very robust. And so I recommend if you haven't looked at it to take a look. And then the Project USA also recently, it's been a couple of years, but there's a whole document on how to document patient addresses. And these are just ways that all of us can kind of start singing from the same sheet of music so that we enter data into our systems the same. So that when we're trying to match across these very large data sets, not only within our large scale IDNs, but also across HIEs and, you know, everyone's using Epic Care Everywhere, having that consistency of data entry is really important just to help support that patient matching across those data sets. Because what happens when we don't do that well is we end up with those patient related errors in patient identity. And the two big ones are duplicates and overlays. Your biggest risk is going to be patient safety. So when you have a duplicate, so if they come into patient access, they don't find the person, their search routine was not robust enough to find them, they're going to create a new person, a new medical record number within their data set. And then that person, when they're being treated as a patient, is not going to, the physician's not going to have all the information that they need that's available to treat that patient appropriately. So they might be missing things like medications, they might be missing diagnoses that are contraindicating. So really important to have all the information that you can available to ensure the safety of your patients. And then on the other side of that are overlays. So if when they present to patient access, the wrong patient is selected, and then your patient that you're seeing is actually being treated based on the information from a different patient, obviously that is a huge risk to that patient. So patient access plays such a critical role in ensuring the safety of our patients in that way. On the other side of that, when it's not done well, as far as utilizing our patient identity practices, there's a lot of increased effort on the back end to resolve those errors. So a lot of hospitals have now very robust data integrity teams that are resolving these errors like duplicates and overlays. Some people have, I think there was a survey from HIMSS that said the average people have 10 staff members that are working data integrity errors on the background. So it's a really large work effort. And then of course there's increased cost to your organization. So I have a few statistics I want to share because AHIMA is working on the Match It Act right now that they've put in front of Congress. It just went forward in February. And some of the numbers that we're using to help try to push this legislation is that for every repeat stay, the average for an inpatient stay cost is $1,950 if there's a patient identity error, $1,750 for an ED visit, and then 35% of all denied claims are resulted from inaccurate patient identity practices. So if you think about, that's a huge result of repeat claims that our people are having to process, and it results in about $17.4 million annually in denied claims for the average facility. On the whole, that is about $6.7 billion for the U.S. healthcare systems that that's costing us. And that's just in denied claims resulting in resulting from patient misidentification. So it's a really critical issue. The other thing that are pushing this is we just have a lot of trends in telehealth. So it's not just patient access. Patients are able to register themselves now. They're putting their own information in. So that's exacerbating some of these issues. So just really nailing down those procedures and policies is super important for your organizations. And I really, I recommend everybody take a look at those policies from AHIMA, the naming conventions, and then the Project USA for some of those standards. So back to you.
Thanks, Rachel. That was the Vice President of Professional Services for Harris Data Integrity Solutions, Rachel Podzorinski.
As you know, every time we have a guest co-host, as we do today with Angela Comfort, we ask them to share a point of view, a POV. Here now with her POV is our guest co-host, Angela Comfort. Good morning again, Angie.
Thanks, Chuck. So I'm going to talk a little bit about climate change. It's no longer a distant threat. It's real current reality affecting all facets of our life, including public health. As the planet warms, healthcare professionals face new challenges, from increased incidences of respiratory diseases due to poor air quality to more frequent cases of heat stroke. In the midst of those challenges, one group of professionals play a pivotal role. And you know what I'm going to say. Healthcare coders. These specialists ensure that the impacts of climate change are accurately documented and managed within the healthcare system through their precise coding. Accurate medical coding goes definitely beyond documentation. It's critical for effective resource allocation. During environmental crises, a spike in specific ICD-10 codes can trigger a reallocation of resources, such as directing more emergency staff to areas with increased heat stroke or enhancing respiratory treatment facilities during times of poor air quality. By ensuring accurate and up-to-date coding, the coding professionals enable healthcare facilities to respond swiftly and efficiently to emerging public health needs. Now, if you've heard me speak previously, you know that I believe in continuous education. So to keep pace with these rapid changes, then our coders are going to be needing education and training ongoing, workshops, seminars, continuing education courses, all the above that happens to be related to climate health issues. This will allow our coders to remain knowledgeable and effective in their roles. The coding professionals might not be on the front lines of healthcare in the traditional sense, but their work is crucial in the battle against climate change-related health issues. Through diligent coding, they not only ensure the operational and financial efficiency of healthcare services, but they also contribute to broader public health strategies aimed at mitigating the impacts of our changing climate. Back to you, Chuck.
Thanks very much. And that is going to be a wrap for our 594th live edition of Tucked In Tuesday. And I want to thank our panelists this morning, Lori Johnson, Dr. James Kennedy, who substituted for Tim Powell, Tiffany Ferguson, Rachel Podzorinski, who reported our lead story, and a very special thank you to my guest co-host, Angela Comfort. And one more thing before we go, we're announcing the winner of the coveted laboratory all-access pass. And Daniel, please give me the, here it is right here, I got it. Clark, give me a drum roll, will you please?
You bet, yeah. Your boss.
Here we go. Oh, good. Okay, so the winner is Jessica Lynn Messick. Congratulations. Thank you again, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll see you next Tuesday.
Tucked In Tuesday is a production of ICD-10 Monitor.